Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
G'day guys, thank you so much for tuning in to Supercharge Mojo. Your ongoing support for the show sure means a heck of a lot. This is my conversation with Greg Elliott. Greg is an exercise physiologist and osteopath who specializes in HRV, which, for those who don't know, is heart rate variability. I didn't know much about this, but Greg has a really progressive take on heart rate variability, monitoring our heart rate, and using wearable technology. I learned a heck of a lot from this conversation, and I hope you guys get a kick out of it too. Let's get into it.
What's a bit of your background, and how did that lead to where you are today, particularly with a focus around heart rate and heart health, call it?
Yeah, so I grew up as an athlete. So I played many different sports and went to the U.S. for basketball. So I played I played college basketball down in Division II school in Pennsylvania. So I was always kind of an athlete and always interested in health and well-being and making sure that everyone around me supported, and we always kind of did this as a family, as everyone's, you know, trying to be healthy, you need healthy and what are the right things to do. So I kind of grew up that with front of mind. I really started to get into some of the physiology when I got to school. Had a really big interest into exercise science, exercise physiology, just obviously based on my background, was very curious around that side of things. And originally I thought it would lead to more of a medical school, but I found a really big, home and interest in regards to exercise as an intervention into that. And that's when I first kind of got introduced to a lot of the heart rate and heart rate variability type of measurement. My master's thesis was in various non-invasive ways of measuring heart function, primarily at the clinical level. How can we measure the function of the heart for people with heart failure, and mainly non-invasive ways? Because, you know, traditionally the way was either catheterization or ultrasound. You know, there's many different ways that can happen, but we're trying to validate various methods. And I got introduced to heart rate variability, which was a newer concept for me. You know, we knew about heart rate, but I started to dive into heart rate variability a little bit more and saw the power of this metric of how it can guide people with various conditions to kind of help them understand themselves a little bit more, and the challenges of what we call healthy. You know, we have the physical sense, but, you know, people ignore that psychological and social aspects of health, and heart rate variability was able to round out that picture.
It's interesting because on the show so far, we've covered a lot of nutritional and dietary things and kind of focusing on gut health and anxiety, but I haven't really touched on the heart as such with the guests. So essentially heart rate variability, I mean, I don't know I know very little about it, but I'm guessing that it's just essentially monitoring the changes in your heartbeat relative to what's going on throughout the day and being aware of it. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So what we're finding to be of significant importance, and this has been kind of really predominant over the last kind of 10 years or so, beforehand clinically, it was well known in literature around this, but it's never been offered to the public due to the sensitivity of capturing this metric. And the reason why is we know heart rate is 60 beats per minute, 90 beats per minute in all those areas. But what we found to be significantly more important is actually the frequency of which those beats occur, right? So you and I can have 60 beats per minute as our resting heart rate, right? Mine beats like a metronome, super consistent, almost every second on the second. And yours goes up and down, varies in like kind of like as you breathe in and breathe out, it goes up to 70, down to 50. But over that minute, you and I occur 60 beats. What we found through literature and through research is that you are in a healthier and happier state than I am.
Mm. When it's fluctuating.
We want more variability in the heart rate, which is very counterintuitive because we think of health and well-being. You're like, well, we want a stable environment. We want everything to be consistent, routine, and organized. This is one of those physiological mechanisms that is opposite. And this is documented through all sorts of literature, through people that have heart disease, people that have better prognosis if they have more heart rate variability, people that are depressed have lower amounts of heart rate variability, people that have high levels of inflammation. So you talk about nutritional aspects, people that have in high inflammatory markers will have lower heart rate variability and so on. And so anything that seems to be stressing the body, and this is where heart rate variability comes in, it's a very sensitive biomarker when it comes to understanding, is our body in a fight or flight or stressed state versus a rest and digest parasympathetic state? And so because of the accuracy that's needed to calculate this, it wasn't necessarily accessible to a lot of people in regards to consumer products because it was such a sensitive metric. And I remember, before I got into osteopathy, I did a lot of ECGs, stress tests and things like that. And there was a lot of people that would come in and say, I was just walking or reading my book and my Fitbit said my heart rate was 200 beats a minute. Right. I'm like
in a relaxed state,
having heart problems. Mm-hmm. I want a stress test to make sure everything's fine. And then it comes to the fact, I'm like, can you please wear your Fitbit while we do the stress test so we can see what the metrics are? And it would say 140 on the ECG and their Fitbit would be 190 and 200. Right. It's like, oh man, like if you can't even get heart rate, right, the amount of beats per minute, you're not going to get that sensitive marker of heart rate variability. The power of this metric is I was looking through the literature of it truly is, in my sense, like a whole health biomarker. People that have poor dietary habits or overweight or obese have lower heart rate variability. People that have all sorts of chronic diseases physically, whether it's cancer, diabetes, have lower heart rate variability. People suffer from depression, PTSD, people that identify as being lonely or having not a good amount of social support have lower heart rate variability. So that's what I love about it is a simplistic number that it's one number and we can kind of relatively look at controlled data like, okay, well, is this person lower than they should be or higher than they should be? But then comes the difficulty of, okay, well, if it's not an ideal number based on demographically, we know we have to dissect all these different areas. It could be dietary related, it could be lack of or too much exercise. It could be, poor sleep habits. It could be to the point of not managing stress well or some sort of emotional regulation or interception or lack of purpose or self-acceptance. It could be to the fact that I don't have a good social support. It can be any of these areas. Which makes it, very confusing in order to be able to understand like, well, how do I best improve this? And we got to kind of look at holistically, from the individual and apply it. And then, but what's great is the feedback of if you change your diet, if you change your exercise, if you start doing meditation or mindfulness or start to be able to get out more social, you can determine, hey, is this intervention that I'm doing actually beneficial? It's a great immediate feedback tool because sometimes with dietary stuff or nutritional, you may have to wait months or years on end to determine like, hey, like blood tests or any kind of DNA testing, whatever necessarily may be, is this working? It takes a little bit of time and a lot of people will fall off the plan before then. This is more that immediate impact that I know that every single day I have a reference point of however I measure it that, hey, is what I'm doing actually benefiting my body?
The counterintuitive thing is really fascinating, because a lot of this progressive approach to medicine is revealing this counterintuitive stuff, like breaking the rules of what we already know. So this concept of the heart having this variation is really genuinely fascinating to me, and just from my own experience, like I was surfing once and I'm 90% sure like a shark came under my surfboard and tapped its nose. There was some thudding on the underside of the board, and me and my buddy just swam to the shore as fast as we could. My concern wasn't so much the shark. I literally thought my heart was going to explode because the adrenaline was pumping so hard. But I think in that moment I realized that there probably wasn't a reason to fear the heart. It could take that amount of variability, as you're saying. It was just a counterintuitive thing. You know, you got to keep your heart rate down in tense situations.
Totally.
But maybe it doesn't work like that from what you're saying in terms of
not necessarily the change in heart rate. Like obviously it's going to speed up and slow down. But what we want to look at is again, you know, what we find is you know, we'll say at rest primarily, right? At rest, what we want is we want a larger amount of variability. Now, granted, in a situation where we need to be tapping into the sympathetic nervous system, right? So the reason why your heart rate went up is anticipating to the point that you have to fight or flight, or you have to be able to produce and create energy in order to be able to address the situation at hand, which is typically that scenario, a life or death situation, that you need all the resources necessary to be able to attack that. So that's a completely normal response. What we're finding is the reason why heart rate variability is so important is it's more of a marker of, it's more of an indication of, can your body get into the rest and digest state? We have so many avenues to accumulate stress right now, right? We talk about all the poor dietary things we have. You talk about the constant feedback of social media and what it can do to our mindsets and fearing various things are going on in the world. We have a lot of these, you know, sympathetically driven, these kind of stressful situations that are constantly bombarded with us these days. So a lot of people don't have the ability to get into this rest and digest calm state because there's no way for us to be able to recover from this. The concept in exercise physiology, they say, is you can never overtrain. You can just under recover.
Mm.
So what we want to see is, do we have the ability to recover from all these stressors? When we're constantly under all this stressful situation, that's not a good thing. So primarily how heart rate variability is measured in the wild right now, with individuals kind of like outside of laboratories, people wear these wearable devices called like the Oura Ring or the Whoop Band and all these type of things that are out there that measure this through the nighttime. And they kind of give you, hey, this is your heart rate variability over the night. What we want to be able to see is that number to be in a relatively higher number, because that should be a time where you are in rest and digest and relaxing. And when you can't be in that state, or you don't have the ability to be into that state, it is a poor health prognosis going forward. This is not a good thing. You're under chronic stress state. So that's how we kind of like look at it in that standpoint. Again, like very similar to you, in stressful situations, absolutely. Is it a healthy response that if a stressor comes in, your body can adapt to it quickly, but then obviously get back down to resting state as much as possible. But it's our ability to get back into that resting state is what we find to be significantly important for us, that we can actually deal with our environment. We can deal with all these stressors that are in front of us, whether it's financial, whether it's we're trying to fight off a various, you know, pathogen that we've been exposed to, or we had a few drinks or a poor, you know, went to have a, you know, ate a whole pizza, whatever necessary may be. There's various stressors for our body. Can we actually deal with those stressors and then come back to a healthy, stable environment? And that's where heart rate variability is primarily used.
So the higher the number, the better. And does that change based on age?
Yeah. So over time, like very similar to you kind of like have a lot of parallels with something called VO2 max, which is the a marker of longevity. So essentially it's how aerobically fit you are. And there's a direct correlation to how long you're going to live is the higher your VO2 max is, the more aerobically fit you are. So over age, over time, you definitely see the heart rate variability trend go down. And so one of the more, in my presentations, one of the more predominant slides that I show is that if you look at the trend of heart rate variability over time and it decreases over that until death by age, And then you plot the exact same thing of resting heart rate over periods of time. Resting heart rate relatively doesn't change too much over age. It really doesn't. Mm-hmm. Comparatively, the heart rate variability significantly decreases, right? So it gives us this indication of, you know, the aging process of what we can possibly do. So overall, yes, the higher, the better, right? And if we have poor health habits, if we have poor genetics, if we have poor different things, it's going to decrease this value over time, and it will continue to decrease from there. What my job is, what I've done over the last decade, is take people's heart rate variability, improve it to as much as we possibly can, and try to sustain that value over that period of time to assure that our body's getting into that rest and digest and give it the best chance to be able to thrive in what they're doing. To making sure that they live a long and healthy life. We don't necessarily have too much data to the point of saying that if we improve someone's heart rate variability over that it translates to over, you know, super, you know, health outcomes are significantly improved. My theory is the fact that yes, it is, because if we look at people in demographic control, we start to see these alterations in heart rate variability. So none of these longitudinal studies have necessarily come in for many different reasons as to why. But things are starting to be able to look at these things as these interventions, whether it's exercise, whether nutritional changes, whether it's sleep changes, start to look at these long-term trends as heart rate variability, that if we can improve it and keep it high, it will translate over to into better health outcomes.
This might be a strange analogy, but it seems almost similar to maybe emotions in a way, in that if somebody is very restrained and not sort of up and down, it might be that there's a tendency to like bottling things up. But actually when we express, you know, when we're not just trying to show a steady state of mood all the time, we express our ups and downs, which are natural, it's more healthy for the stress levels. Is that a fair analogy?
Completely. That is a huge component. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, the popularity of heart rate variability really exploded when it comes to training management, right? So you look at high level athletes of like, okay, what is their major stress in life that impacts their recovery, which is their training, right? So you can, you know, decrease and increase the training load and training management. We found that if you kind of guy with heart rate variability, you get better results in regards to making sure that people are peaking for various events and making sure they're doing everything possible. What's highly neglected right now in majority of the population that looks at heart rate variability is exactly what you're saying, is the emotional component of it all. And it's the short-term strategy. Short-term strategy sometimes for emotions, right? And I use example as an athlete. Like I can go through also, I can fail an exam. I can have a fight with girlfriend at the time. I can, you know, have a fight with family members, all that type of stuff. But I have to go into that game, perform at the very highest level and ignore everything that's going on, or my performance is going to suffer. As like, I need to be able to control that and be in kind of a normal state. So short-term, great strategy in order to that stuff. But as you know, long-term, you're bottling everything inside. You don't get to express this. You ruminate the problem. You magnify the problem into everything that's going on. Your thought awareness is all over the map, and it's not present in reality. And you start to be able to hold on to these things, and it's constantly fighting at you. And that's not a good thing if you're not doing the right things to be able to mitigate that and recover from it. And this is where, again, my process in helping people with heart rate variability is first working on things that are external to them that they can relatively control, right? So the big three is sleep, nutrition, and physical activity and exercise, right? Those things are external. They can control those things. Once they kind of have those houses in order, we start to be able to address very much what you're saying when we talk about the self-acceptance, right? Or do they feel safe? Do they feel, you know, do they have, you know, anything that's causing anxiety or stress, and start to go with things that are more internal after that, which takes a little bit longer, a little more self-discovery, because it depends on the awareness of the individual. Like, are they holding things inside? Are they very expressive into what's going on? And maybe that's a problem, like those kind of the pendulum. Like, it's good to express yourself, but not too much. You know, it benefits in order to hold things inside, but you want to be able to kind of, you know, interplay between those things. But you're completely right. People that hold in emotions, people that don't express those things, have higher levels of self-reported stress, which then we know high levels of stress individuals is pretty much the most important risk factor in the development of chronic disease.
Yeah, and I mean, particularly in men, we're kind of conditioned to bottle it all in. Just again, from experience, I had some anxiety when I was young, and I remember being really surprised because, you know, anxiety was kind of so visceral, and I thought there was something wrong with me physically and all that. But then when I got on the treadmill and was tested, like, I was actually really fit. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's like, well, how come I'm quite okay, like pounding the treadmill, but there's all this stuff going on, and it was all anxiety related.
Absolutely. It's a lot of people aren't self-aware of that, right? We're bombarded with the information and especially with men, sometimes you kind of have to put your head down. And I really, I truly believe sometimes you hear these individuals that, like, very similar to yourself, are physically fit. They try to eat well, but they have high pressure stakes jobs, right? They might not sleep or recover appropriately. They have to travel, or they have to have late night meetings, and it's constantly in their mind and it's waking them up. So they have disrupted sleep as because of it. They lose touch with friends, and maybe have a difficult home life and things like that. And all of a sudden there's a heart attack that came out of nowhere, right? For this individual. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, no, I really don't think these things come out of nowhere. There's some things that people can do and be super healthy in, but there's so many areas of the development of chronic disease and the quality of life that you necessarily need that comprise what health actually is that aren't necessarily measured. That's kind of being masked by these other areas of saying, oh, I'm okay in these areas of my life, so I'm healthy, right? And that never is the complete picture. And so this is where I found the value of heart variability, because we've had fit individuals and people that relatively, eat healthy, that are in the lowest, in the low 10% of their demographically matched age group. And it's like, well, what's going on? And we got to kind of get you're doing, from the biological or physiological things, you're doing 90% of it absolutely perfect. Hey, great. But we have to, when we do the assessments of the psychological and the social aspects of well-being, it's like we have major red flags into there, whether, we don't have you self-reported high levels of stress, you have low emotional intelligence and emotional regulation, your interception or your mind-body connection is completely altered, right? You even though you have a high-powered job, you don't feel you have a purpose, you're not really self-acceptance, you don't have good self-acceptance, right? You don't have any close relationships or any kind of mentors or people that you can go and talk to and have those things. Like, those areas are just impactful as in health as being physically fit or having a good diet. It's just, it's hard for us to be able to measure those things from a holistic nature because it's relied on purely subjective. And the power of HRV to me is it's a kind of this one objective tool that we can start to be able to have these conversations, with other individuals that may not perceive what's going on to be something that is, not have to deal with their physical health. It's like, no, there's a whole component of health from here that aren't addressed. But this is why, like, it bridges that conversation with these individuals of saying, hey, we've done all these other things. You're doing everything phenomenal here, but this, we have this overall marker. It's not ideal. Let's start to address the other impacts of these areas and start opening that conversation.
And that bridge has just not been there in traditional medicine. It's so awesome that this more progressive approach is so much more integrative, because even though you have this focus on the heart, it's so relative to everything. That connecting bridge, I just don't think has really been there in the past. Things have just been like isolated.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing is early on in my career as exercise physiologist and osteopath, I always thought in my head, it was like, hey, in school they teach you have all the tools. Hey, if someone has this, here's what you do. Here's this, and obviously we know in reality that's not the case. And early on I was naive to the fact that I thought I had all the tools and starting to be able to help people, and I'm like, well, how am I not getting paid, people better? But this person is, and they're a clinical counselor, and that person is, and they're a health coach, right? And that person is. Because they're a massage, that like how do those people get people better if they don't have the tools that I do, right? And that's, to me, it's just like, okay, well, I have certain tools and certain things that I'm good at. So health must be way more complex, right? And anxiety and chronic pain and fibromyalgia and all these conditions that the medical system has had a very difficult time treating, that they must be way more complex than my specific lens. And I want to be able to open that up. And heart rate variability to me was able to open that up on a visual standpoint. And every time with my initial consultations with people, I always say to them with my assessment, like, I'll ask a lot of questions, right? I'm like, my main job right now is to assess you. So I know exactly what I need to be able to do. And I want to make sure you're in the right room.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Right. We have a clinic here that has, you know, naturopaths and massage therapists, physiotherapists, like many different type of practitioners in here that all have great tools, especially ones that I don't have. And based on what I want to be able to find is do I have the tools that are right for this specific person that's in front of me? Right. If not, I need to be able to get them to the right individual, the right type of intervention possible. And then to me, it's like, well, how do we know that this individual is actually improving and getting better independent of their symptomology, right? Because pain can come on for any reason, right? You've seen it. Sometimes you watch a movie and you see somebody get cut with a saw. You're like, oh, and you kind of like grab your body and you're kind of like, oh, I can kind of feel it. Or we know how pain is very, very tricky. So how do we know these people are actually progressing? And this is where HRV has kind of that thing. If I send it to a naturopath or a dietitian, whatever it may be, and they make nutritional changes, how do I know that there is interventions that are working independent of, you know, do I agree with them or not? Are we actually getting results in the individual? And this is where HRV comes in for me as this kind of overall marker of we're making the right progress for this person.
So these wearable devices, they essentially do the same thing. I mean, I'm sure there's different brands and things like you say, but what do you recommend in terms of those?
Great question. Yeah. So, I mean, there's way more wearables on the market than when I first started. When I first started measuring heart rate variability, people had to have a mobile application and had to wear a heart rate strap. And they open the app, they had to press the go button and do their heart rate variability. And now we can get these kind of like high level nocturnal measurements from these wearable devices. And so there's many that are out there. I'm a person that I'm more about data quality and the level of information coming back than about the sexiness of the product or what it can necessarily do. Like I'm, give you an example. I'm not a big fan of things that calculate biological age. And the reason why is because I don't know what's in that. What components comprise this biological age and exactly how much? You get these algorithms where you're kind of like, I don't know what gets in the algorithm. So I don't know how to action this. If it says you're 10 years older than you should be, it doesn't tell me what to do about it, right? Because I don't have a metric that tells me that this is what I like. There's no system in place that can really, because again, it's a business and I understand that. So there's some companies out there that are more about the business aspect and the sexiness and this kind of thing and not necessarily providing practitioners like myself kind of any kind of information that I'm like, well, I know how to action this now, right? So there's three companies that I have no direct affiliation with or no benefit. There's no conflict of interest here. From that standpoint, but the three companies and all depends in many different areas. And I'll kind of explain as to why you would choose each one. So in no order, one of the top ones for me is a company called Oura Ring. They're out of Finland, company. They've been around for a very long period of time and they're a ring based wearable product. What they do is they publish all the research. You can get all the raw data. They have great access to their information and all those things. So they really try to be the gold standard when it comes to the metrics that are coming out of their device, right? So they're probably one of the more popular ones that are out there for the people that know wearables. It's a ring base. You actually got one on. You can take a look at it. It's a small little ring based wearable. No, nothing on it, but it's got little sensors on the inside that you can measure. Does your heart rate, does your sleep, does your activity levels, all those type of things, which is great. Now, if you like rings, great. Some people don't like rings. Right. They just don't want to wear rings. They're not used to it. So, okay, well, you know, I recommend Oura Ring all day long, but like, I don't want to wear a ring. Okay. Well, then the other kind of more popular way to do it is a wrist based, right? So data quality is important for people, but there's a company called BioStrap. They're a wrist based wearable company. I have one at home, that I wear, at nighttime there. They don't have any display on it, very similar to the Oura Ring. It's just purely about the sensor itself and the high data quality. But obviously, it pairs with an app. You can sync it and those type of things. So that's if you don't like a ring, then you have a wrist-based one. If you want your wearable to do other things, right? So you want to be able to do your exercise or see your time, or you want to be more of like a smart watch, right? Than it is necessarily just a wearable. You want it to actually do stuff and be somewhat functional than just to be able to gather data. Then my suggestion would be Garmin would be the best smartwatch that is out there. They've always been kind of the forefront of a lot of different integrations and that, and they bought a company in 2020 called Firstbeat that has a history of high quality heart rate variability and biometric data coming through, and then had incorporated a bunch of their information and a bunch of their technology into the wearable devices, which these guys, it pairs with, you know, glucose monitors, it pairs with other type of sensors. It's really integrative. And then you can get messages through, you can get your text messages, you can get all sorts of stuff. So it's very interactive as well. So those are the kind of the three companies. So that if you are okay with a ring, Oura Ring is a great one to look at. If you're okay with a wrist-based wearable and you just want the data quality more than anything, BioStrap's a great company. But if you want your wearable to be a little more functional, Garmin would be the wearable to go with.
Be interesting if you have one that has the text messages and you get the text message and then you see the heart rate go up.
we've had that a lot with individuals, and I always say, and this is one of the downsides of people with beforehand when I was, like I said, people had to wear a heart rate strap and do the timers. They would do the timer and then they get an email coming through. Right. And then it's like, I want a way to like mitigate that influence. Mm-hmm. This is where the wearables come in, because they take it as soon as you fall asleep, it starts taking samples. They say anywhere from about 60 to 90 samples a night. So a lot of data that comes through it. And so you wake up and then it stops taking the information. Right. So there's very little influence from your cognition during that time. Right. So you're not consciously aware of anything. It's more of a marker of what's going on with your physiology than when you wake up. And I remember I had one client early on that had a very strict morning routine and stuck with it. And we started talking about, you know, when he takes his heart rate variability, because it seemed a little bit off comparatively. He's like, well, I sip my coffee and I listen to my jazz music when I do it. And I go, well, I can't compare your numbers now to normal, but I can compare you to you, because now it's you're doing it at the same time every single morning, doing the exact same thing, right? So I mean, relatively start to look at that standpoint. So, I mean, it's consistent in that nature. But I can't compare his numbers to somebody else's, because majority of people are lying down. They're almost unconscious when they're kind of doing these numbers specifically. So I'm like, I can't tell you if they're good or bad, but we can kind of at least to the point of the goal is to increase this over periods of time. But that's why I didn't like about the morning readings, especially for the generalized population. There's too many ways and too many ways to mitigate that, even to a point that I was like, oh, so you didn't measure your heart rate variability on Saturday. It's like, yeah, well, I went out late Friday night and I didn't want to do the measurement in the morning because I knew it would be bad. I'm like, well,
it is what it is. Yeah, it is what it is, right?
Well, the point is to show when you do have a late night and have alcohol or about that, and you go get a couple pizzas and you go to sleep at like 3 o'clock in the morning, what that actually does to your body. What is the actual numbers coming through?
So that the awareness comes, and then you can make change, adjustment.
Exactly, right? And so that's been a big game changer with people with these wearables, is that when they have no control over that and they see what two or three drinks can actually do, or if they have a change in their sleep routine or that type of stuff, or travel, they can see the impact of that data that it has on them. And they go, oh, now I'm aware, which, you know, we know is a gigantic, intervention in itself. It's just being aware of your actions and your behaviors of what's going on. If you're unaware of it. And so that feedback has always been highly valuable for people, even to a point where we have one client that was a on and off alcoholic for 30 years. And it's now almost been an entire year, the longest she's ever been without having a drink, after seeing the impact that HRV has when she drinks.
Well, that's an example of the benefit right there. If it's helping people make change, like, such a useful tool. Are they really pricey? I mean, listeners can look them up, but do they vary a lot in price? Are they expensive?
Yeah, so it's becoming more and more accessible. I mean, back in the day when people were first doing this, I have a coworker here that worked at a sports institute and with one of the countries, working with a bunch of Olympians, and they had a company come in that says, oh, we can measure HRV. It was in the morning and that type of stuff. And the system itself, the software and the system to be able to measure it, was $30,000 independent of all the other stuff that needs to be involved, right? So just the setup fee was like 30 grand. He's like, well, that's crazy. Now these wearables, I think the Oura Ring is around about $300 US. Garmin's are you know, can be, you know, upwards of $1,000. The BIOS strap, I think, is in the neighborhood of about $400 to $500. But you're getting players like Fitbit that are coming into this. You're getting you know, Apple Watch is starting to get into this. So you're getting a lot more competition out there as the data quality gets better. So I think even for the $100 Fitbit, now it measures heart rate variability. Now I haven't necessarily tested the accuracy of it all, but at least now it's starting to get that technology and the awareness is starting to come in cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, even to a point that if you don't want to get a wearable and you do want to go say, hey, I just want to be able to measure it and see and maybe do it every morning, there's free, if not very inexpensive, like $10 for apps that you, if you have a heart rate strap or even your finger on the phone, you can actually measure your heart rate variability if you want to be able to start there and start to be able to look at it.
Yeah, I guess it's like getting used to the process in some way and then finding your way forward.
Exactly.
I had a dietary issue and I took I can't remember what it was, but I took some kind of root tablet and I thought because it was like a natural root. And then I was in Spain and my heart started like palpitating all the time. And I was taken to many of these things. And I naively thought that because they were natural, like they couldn't have that effect. But then I read the guidelines properly and it was, it sounds ridiculous saying it, but yeah, then I read it and it was like, this can literally knock your heartbeat out of rhythm. Mm. So of course I stopped and it got back into its normal rhythm. It just sprung to mind because, I was kind of amazed. I was kind of surprised that this natural thing could do that to my heart.
Well, and that's the thing is, I always explain to people because of interventions, right? You know, we have an idea of what works and what doesn't work for a vast majority of the population. I kind of use the example of I did the, I started to go through a cold contrast type of intervention, right? So looking at, I think I was doing the cold showers at the time and, you know, everyone was saying there's benefit. So I tested out myself. I don't like to do things and kind of wholeheartedly just do it and power through it. And they say, oh, it improves testosterone by a certain percentage, blah, blah, blah. And you have to understand, like, that's not in everybody, right? Testosterone growth hormone may go up in certain individuals, but it may not or even go the other way, right? Like, it could work for a majority of the people, but not everybody. And so this is what, again, I like heart rate variability. And when we talk about this type of stuff, is that you can have these interventions. Just because research says that it works out for 99.9% of the population, you may be that 0.1%. that it doesn't work or has adverse effects into what's going on. And I want to be able to have that feedback. So rather kind of saying, no, it's good. They keep doing this thing, like, you know, like fight through it, or, you know, it's not like you may have to deal with some stomach issues or you may feel this and it's completely fine. It's like, I want that feedback quicker. I don't want that feedback objectively. So we know what's going on, because sometimes people aren't aware to the point of like, they're just ingesting something and be like, I think it's doing benefit. I don't know. And I think it may be, that it could be possible placebo, whatever necessarily may be, but I want that objective feedback of you're spending money having to do this. You're spending time in order to do this and you're putting effort into this. Is it actually worthwhile for you to be able to do that? I had an individual 24 years old, had an Oura Ring. His heart rate variability was probably a third of what it should have been for someone, ex athlete, entrepreneur, all that type of stuff. It's about a third of what it should be. And he's like, well, I'm spending $600 a month in supplements. I'm like, are any of those things absolutely 100% necessary or like medically advised? And he goes, no. And I go, just do an experiment, stop all of them completely and see what happens for 6 weeks. No change in his HRV, no change in his sleep, no change in his subjective behavior, right? None of that stuff. Okay, well, why are you spending this amount of money on these supplements if they're not actually producing anything, right? And so it's just great to have that feedback of looking at those things. That sometimes, you know, with these supplementations or various things may promise the world, but it can work for vast majority of the population. But you really have to be very similar to you. It's like you have to be the end of one. Like the thing's got to work for you individually. And I think HRV is a inexpensive, high quality way to get that feedback as to the benefit of the effort that you're trying to be able to make.
Yeah, it gives you a roadmap in a way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a tradition on the show to have guests propose challenges for listeners, but I think in this case, it's pretty clear. start monitoring the heart rate variability.
Yeah. And what you want to be able to do is the challenge is this, is I always say it's at least 7 days, right? Because you want to get a kind of a week in its entirety. And I would tell people start tomorrow. And the reason why is because you kind of go, oh, well, I have this coming up. There's never going to be a perfect 7 days, right? Mm-hmm. But start with the 7 days and take a look at the numbers and see where they're at. And you know, based on the metric that you have, the, you know, whether it's a smartphone app, whether it's your heart rate strap and smartphone app, whether it's a wearable or all these type of things, they'll have some sort of normative data that you can find out there, right? So whether the company that's out there, all of them have out, what is a good HRV? Because everyone always asks. And they'll have some sort of blog post on their website about, hey, what is our normative curves around various ages and genders and like. So what my challenge for everyone that I see is 7 days, get at least 7 days in, and it's gonna be every single day for those 7 days, right? And then from there, kind of see is that, you know, where those numbers are, they typically give you an average of what those 7 days are. Is that an ideal state for where I feel I should be at comparatively to what I know based on what the blog post says? And if you see like, hey, it's not, or yes, it is, but it's interesting when you start tracking your behaviors. You know, if you're going to change something in your life, you do those 7 days and kind of go, okay, well, I'm going to now, the challenge would be change a behavior, whether it's a supplement, a diet, an exercise routine, meditation, mindfulness, whatever. You do some sort of intervention and see what actually happens to your heart rate variability over that time. It's very, very insightful for people to say, even some small little changes in what's going on, whether it's a implementation of a morning routine alteration or a nighttime supplement or whatever medicine be. It's quite powerful to show that even some small little change to what's going on can have a massive impact to your health and well-being. So yeah, completely. The challenge would be get 7 days in. Take a look at the value. There's many different companies out there that measure it. And then look up, you know, the website and you search into their blog area. What is a good HRV? They'll have some sort of reference range into what's going on and to see, hey, is this an ideal state? And how their behaviors impact their health and well-being.
Yeah, very cool. It's something I'm definitely going to do. That's for sure. I was aware of the ring and the watches and things, but I wasn't fully aware of the exact details of it all. So definitely going to give it a try. Where can people find you and your work?
Yeah. Many different areas. I have my own kind of personal website, which is gregory.ca. You can take a look at some of the stuff that I have there. I'm updating it regularly now. People have been asking for me to have a kind of a centralized resource of that type of stuff. So that's kind of what I'm doing with, you know, the podcast a bit in and resources and all that. So I'm building it out as of right now. I also have a startup company and our startup company, what we do is we take the information from the wearable product, and we, contextualize it for people, right? So if your sleep is not good, if your HRV is not good and you want to be able to like, well, how do I best action this? Is that we provide individuals with an assessment and we go through 10 different factors that can definitely improve health and well-being. And we kind of give you a prioritized list of those behaviors, right? Is it more important right now to focus on my physical activity more than it is my emotional regulation? Do I need to be able to connect with people or to be able to focus on my sleep more? So we kind of give a prioritized list objectively of individuals and then provide some resources around that. And we're kind of building this community out from now. So the company as it's known right now is HealthQB. So it's yourhealthqb.com. But our community is to be called the Optimal Community. So the Optimal Me Community. And it's going to be a free resource for people. It's a free app as of right now. So if you have some sort of wearable product, we're adding all sorts of wearables in there as we speak. We have BioStrap, we're having in Fitbit, we have Oura Ring, we're getting in Garmin. So we're going to slowly start to add all these wearables into the app. Provide you some contacts, and then you can be part of this free community that we're going to provide some resources of all these different areas. Bring in experts and have all sorts of Q&As with individuals to kind of grow the awareness around, you know, what it means to be healthy, not just from a physical sense, but also from, you know, the mind and your environment and all those different areas and how to best impact those.
Very cool. Like I say, I was losing a bit of faith in the traditional models, but a lot of the stuff I'm learning on this show and these progressive integrative approaches, it's really cool to know that you guys are out there developing this stuff and pushing it.
Yeah, the wave has started. It's going to take a lot of effort, but people are starting to be significantly more vocal on the limitations. And I think what the biggest alteration is the fact that it's now the medical community is starting to talk up about it, right? You've had the Pierre Atitas and the Mark Hymans. They're starting to understand the complexities of the human being and to be able to, we have to look at health a different way. And they're starting to be able to promote this. So not only was it coming from external, from people, whether it was from chiropractors or osteopaths or, you know, psychologists, but now it's coming absolutely within the medical community itself. They understand their limitations and where things need to be able to go. So the wave has started. It's going to take a while to get into the public domain, but definitely everything is pushing in this way where it's more about prevention. It's more about holistic. It's more about understanding of we shouldn't just wait till someone has a major problem before we start to intervene. And what are those warning signs from truly a biopsychosocial perspective so we can make sure that people live long, healthy lives before it's too late.
Mm. No, I really appreciate your time and your expertise. It's been really educational and insightful for me. So I'm sure it will be for the listeners too.
Yeah. And thank you so much. I mean, be able to bring people on and educate your listeners from many different areas. It's a big undertaking. And it's, you know, sometimes it's a big learning curve for people as they get different areas and conflicting information. But obviously the quality of guests that you have on your show is quite high. And so the listeners are getting, you know, the right information and great information to make kind of really positive changes, not only to their physical health, but their mental health as well.
Yeah, definitely. No, definitely. It's awesome. Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.